Corwin dithered about it until he heard the shower stop, at which point he'd decided to stay. He reached to the bedside stand's control panel, killed the TV, blacked the windows, turned on the nightlight, and toggled the Do Not Disturb light on outside the door. A few minutes later, Usna came out of the bathroom, her hair toweled but damp, pajama top misbuttoned, and stood by the side of the bed for a few seconds, regarding him with an entirely unreadable expression. "Should I go?" he asked softly. She stood, wavering, the uncertainty clear on her face. He slowly rose, climbed down from the bed, and stood facing her. "Utsuna," Corwin said, his voice soft but charged with emotion. "I'll leave if you want me to. I overstepped my bounds, and I'm sorry. But before I do, I want you to know something." He stopped, took a deep breath, then lowered himself to one knee before her, his head bowed. "I love you, Utsuna Tenjo," he said, "on whatever terms you'll have me. I know that you're your own prince, and I wouldn't challenge that. It's one of the things I love about you. But even princes need knights to support them. If you'll let me, I'll be your knight. I'll ride alongside you and help you get past this. My strength, such as it is yours." He raised his face, wet with tears of his own. "I'll never knowingly tell you a lie. I'll never, never do anything to deliberately hurt you. I'll never do anything to you that you don't tell me you want." The corner of his mouth had stopped bleeding. Without a moment's hesitation, he tore the skin at the edge of his left index fingernail with his teeth, then held the wounded finger solemnly up to her. Fresh blood, black in the dim light, trickled down over the pad of his fingertip. "All this I swear," he said, "on my own blood." Utsuna gazed silently at him for almost a full minute. Then, slowly, hesitantly, she reached out, took his hand in both of hers, and softly kissed his bloody fingertip, tears rolling down her face. "Corwin," she whispered. He rose to his feet, and she fell into his arms again. It was different this time, as different as night from day, and he understood and responded accordingly. He fell back onto the bed with her, cradled her in his arms, let her beat her fists against his bare chest, and arranged the covers over them for warmth. His mind whirled. The last time he'd seen anyone like this. A year ago. Caitlin. Dredd's cool finger touched his heart again. "Oh, Allfather, no," he moaned inside. "Has this happened to every girl I love?" Corwin held Utsuna a little tighter, meaningless, instinctive murmurings coming from his lips, and she worked out whatever it was over the space of the next couple of hours, alternately trembling, raging, and sobbing before finally lying quiet and spent in his arms. Finally, she looked up at him with a weak, wan smile and said in a softly wavering voice, "I suppose I should explain what that was all about, huh?" "You don't have to," he told her. "I want to." "That's fine. I just wanted you to know you don't have to." Her smile became a little stronger. "That's just like you, isn't it?" she murmured. "You're sweet. You don't deserve this." "I stepped on the mine," said Corwin softly. "I clean up the mess." Utsuna actually mustered a chuckle for that, then fell silent for a long time. He stroked her back gently, waiting, not prompting. Finally, she told him. "I told you," she said, "about Anthe's brother." "Hmm," said Corwin. "Well, there are a couple of things I left out. One day, not too long before I found out what he really was, he took me for a ride in his car. He had to deliver flowers to somewhere, it doesn't matter where, and he asked me to go along. I thought we were friends. It sounded like fun, so I went. We ended up going to an amusement park, staying the night at a hotel. You could see the park from the hotel room window. Corwin didn't think he liked where this was headed. We had a lot of fun, she said, her tone hushed and reminiscent. It was a good day. I never liked him more than I did that day. And that night, well... She shrugged, a helpless little gesture. He seduced me. Corwin closed his eyes, breathed through his nose, tried to stop his big, powerful hands from clenching into fists. I thought he loved me, I guess, Utsuna went on softly. Or I thought I loved him. Either way, he wanted me, and I let him have me. It was so strange. Like, I didn't want to do it, but I didn't feel like I had a choice. It was like something that had to happen, whether I wanted it or not. I can't explain it. There was no violence, no force, just that day and his eyes and my head was swimming. Somehow he made me feel like I owed it to him. So, I didn't want to, but I gave him what he wanted. Afterward, even before I found out the truth about him, I felt awful. Like I'd betrayed someone. Or everyone. His fiancée, my mysterious prince, my best friend, myself. I kept asking myself, how did this happen? I only came here to help him deliver some flowers. What the hell happened? What am I going to do now? Utsuna paused, took a long, shivery breath, and let it out again. Everything changed after that, she said. I tried to tell myself that it was all right, that I was just overreacting, that everything would be fine. But whenever he was near, after that, I felt a subtle sort of wrongness. He still wanted me, and he was still so beautiful, and still so charming, that I was tempted. But I never let him. I came close a couple of times to convincing myself that I was just being silly, to go ahead and maybe try to enjoy it this time, but... She shook her head, then fell silent, her story told. Corwin said nothing, his face still, but his mind spinning. I'll kill him, Corwin thought as his mind raced in circles. If I have to breach the veil of the 10th world with my bare hands, if I have to suffer the censure of the Aesir Council, I don't care how long it takes, or how far I have to go, or what I have to give up to get there. I will hold Akio Otori's life in my hands, and I will see it ended. I swear it on my mother's light. Utsuna waited for a few minutes. When he still didn't speak, she felt the tears rising again. Her voice breaking, she said, I apologize, and started to pull away from him. Somehow he managed to convey that he didn't want her to go without making her feel like he was restraining her, and she stayed. For what? He asked hoarsely. Being raped? No, she said, not quibbling over his blunt choice of words. For being so messed up. For ruining a beautiful day. For... leading you on and then pushing you away. The day was still beautiful, Corwin said, his voice softer, gentle now. He brushed the back of his hand across her cheek and added quietly, And anyway, you didn't lead me on. I crossed the line, not you. It was an accident. It was a liberty. Utsuna reached up a hand to trace the line of his jaw, prickly with evening stubble. You're entitled to a few liberties, she said, and very tentatively kissed his rough cheek. It's just, I... She shook her head. It was a day like this one, and suddenly it all came flooding back. It doesn't make any sense. I could never compare you to him. But suddenly it was like I was back there, and it was all happening again. She gave a wry chuckle that turned into a sob and said, ironic, considering how often I wish I were back there. That was as far as Utrina got before something inside her broke loose again, this wave composed mostly of grief for her missing love, guilt over having almost betrayed her, and a crushing feeling of uselessness for having been unable to find a way back to her. Again, Corwin could offer little in the way of reassurance. He took all the blame for the second part onto himself, telling her that it was all his fault, that she would have stopped him anyway before that last fateful step was taken, that he would have realized what was wrong himself in another minute or so. For the rest, though, he could only hold her, whisper to her, trying to smother her pain with nothing but the sheer weight of his sympathy. He could only tell her again and again that it was all right, that he was sure Anthy was safe and waiting for her someplace, that he would help her find that place, that most ancient of soothing, meaningless platitudes. Everything would be all right. And, amazingly, that seemed to work, at least until the next wave. They passed the rest of the night this way, riding one wave of emotion after another, catching fitful bits of sleep here and there, until finally, at near dawn, they crashed through into a deeper slumber. Just before slipping away, feeling as hollow and spent as if she'd just run a marathon, Utrina remembered a night, several months before, when the two of them had done something similar. Only then it had been Corwin's soul rubbed raw, and her sheltering arms and soft words trying to soothe away the pain. She wondered if he had felt as safe as this when their roles had been reversed, then snuggled closer and finally, blissfully, fell into a peaceful sleep. The front desk woke them at 11, calling to remind Utrina, who was the only one registered to this room, after all, that checkout was at noon. Somehow, she managed to speak coherently to the desk clerk, despite all the events of the previous 24 hours crashing in a tidal wave through her memory. Then she hung up, lay staring at the phone in disbelief for a moment, and rolled back into the arc of Corwin's arms, her left hand on his chest, just where she'd been when she'd finally fallen asleep for good. "They're throwing us out," he murmured with a faint smile. Utrina nodded. "1 hour warning," she replied. "Hmm," he said, and turned fully onto his back, his right arm flopping down alongside him. "Ow," he remarked as something in his back cracked. "Memo to self. Sleeping in the same position for an entire night, or morning, or whatever, is bad." "Under the circumstances," said Utrina softly, "I can't complain." Corwin turned his head to regard her, then smiled and did his best to hug her with the arm that was still underneath her. "I suppose not," he said, and kissed her on the forehead. It was strange, and it struck them both at the same time how strange. After the previous night's near miss and all its consequences, here they lay in each other's arms, and there was no awkwardness, no looking away or shuffling apart, as if moving furtively away from each other now would somehow balance the time they'd spent in contact. There just didn't seem to be any need of that. It reminded Utrina of that morning in Toronto, the first time she'd awakened to find herself embracing Caitlin. There was all that same sensation of warmth, contentment, and safety, devoid of all the usual sniggering connotations that waking in another's arms carried with it. But then, in a way, what they'd spent the previous night doing was more intimate than what they'd almost spent it doing. The thought gave Utrina pause. She glanced up from her contemplation. Her eyes met Corwin's, and somehow she could see that he'd just had the very same thought. They smiled at each other, then got up. Corwin crossed the room to the side of the window, stretched, yawned, and pressed the button that switched the window from double black to one way. Sharp winter sunlight streamed into the room. Utrina pattered over, raising her hands overhead with fingers interlaced and cracking her back first this way, then that, and admired the view. It had snowed again during the night, while the pair of them challenged the last and greatest of Utrina's demons. A new Avalon glittered in the noonday sun, the monolith's sightlines just as spectacular in the day as the night. A new Avalon Police Department jetpack cop, jaunty in his blue leather cavalry jacket and the rudder-equipped helmet that made him look like an old-fashioned hood ornament, zoomed past the window, the blue and red lights on his epaulets flashing, on his way to bring a little justice to a Zeppelin pilot with quirky ideas about his place in the traffic pattern. Corwin and Utrina turned and looked at each other in good light for the first time since they'd switched the room's lights off and settled down to watch late-night TV. They held that gaze for a few moments until finally Utrina said what they were both thinking. "We look awful." Corwin nodded, chuckling. He didn't know how he looked, although the stiffness and soreness of parts of his face gave him an idea. But Utina looked, well, like she'd spent most of the night before crying. Her eyes were red-rimmed, then dark-ringed and bloodshot, her face blotchy, her hair a complete disaster. Her pajama top was still misbuttoned. "I guess we'd better get ready to go," he said at last. Utina nodded, and they turned to go their separate ways, she to the bathroom and he through the door that led to the adjoining room he hadn't used. As they reached the doorways, both paused, turned, made eye contact. Then they both laughed softly, turned again, and went about their business. In his own room's bathroom, after brushing his teeth and showering, Corwin stood in front of the sink and surveyed himself in the mirror. Unlike Utina, he looked as if he'd been punched in the face, then spent most of the night crying. His face wasn't blotchy, though, just bone pale, except for the black bruise at the corner of his mouth and the purpling ring around his right eye. He combed his hair, which was as pointless an activity as always, then dressed, gingerly pulling first t-shirt, then sweater over his battered face. It wasn't such a bad bruise compared to some of the whompings he'd taken in combat training, but it stung all the same. His finger hurt, too, but then he had bitten it until it bled, so he supposed it had a right to. He treated it with the room's first aid kit. It occurred to him that the back of Utina's pajama top must be smeared with blood. He made a mental note to replace the set. Then he packed up his toiletries and yesterday's clothes in his overnight bag, phoned the front desk for a bellbot to take their bags down, collected his coat, left his keycard on top of the TV, and went next door. Utina was just emerging from the bathroom, dressed in her red Martian Army fatigue trousers, just pulling a scarlet-flecked black rib-knit sweater over her head. Corbin had given her the sweater for her birthday, and this was his first opportunity to see her in it. Despite everything, he found himself pausing for a moment to take her in, a little smile playing at his lips. Utina raked her hair free from the collar, shook it down her back, then surveyed Corwin with a wry smile of her own. "Well," she said, "now you look like clean hell anyway." Corwin chuckled. Utina crossed to him, her face going serious. He tossed his coat on the bed and took both of her hands as she reached him. "Let's not blame ourselves for things we almost did," she said softly. "Okay? Almost doesn't count. We cried about it last night. Now let's let it go." Gravely, Corwin nodded. "Okay," he replied hoarsely. "There's something I want you to know, though," she went on, her voice dropping further. "It's hard for me to say, and it might be hard for you to hear, but I think we both have to. After all we've been through, after Worcester and outer space and Asgard and last night, I don't want there to be anything but total honesty between us. Nothing but truth, ever." He nodded again. "I want that too," he whispered. "Okay, so I have to tell you this, and you have to listen to it." She raised her eyes to his. There were tears in them again, but they didn't flow. Not yet. "I love you, Corwin. I've fought against it for a long time, because I didn't know how to reconcile it with the love I have for Anthy. And I still don't know that. But I've realized that I can't go on denying it just because I don't know what to do with it." Speechless, Corwin just gazed back at her. They were the same height now, almost exactly, his eyes saying everything that his voice couldn't. "It doesn't change anything," Utina went on. "That's the hard part. I can't put in words all that you've done for me. You've healed me. You've made me believe again. Made me myself again. You've made me as complete as I can be without Anthy. But..." She trailed off, unable to phrase the one great caveat. She didn't need to. Corwin nodded slowly. "I understand," he said, his voice the barest of whispers through a throat so tight that the pain made his eyes sting. He coughed, then said in a slightly more audible tone, "And I will help you find her, if you'll have my help." Utina nodded, those pent-up tears finally finding their way down her face. But they weren't tears of sorrow, at least not completely. She let go of his hands, took that last half-step forward, and hugged him as hard as she could. "Of course I will," she whispered. "Of course I will." They pulled themselves together after that, washed their faces again, and left the hotel, grateful that in-room checkout spared them from the reactions, however subdued by professional veneer, of the staff to their appearance. Neither spoke until they were in the Griffin and headed for the exit from the parking garage. Minutin turned to Corwin and said, "So now you're my knight." Corwin grinned. "That's right," he replied. "My iron knight," she added, patting the Griffin's dashboard with a smile. Corwin, still smiling, guided the big black car up onto the Central Expressway, heading north for Crescent Heights, and the silence was a comfortable one, as theirs had nearly always been. Once they were up to highway speeds, Corwin shifted into fifth, then left his hand on the knob for a moment before slowly removing it and, hesitantly, offering it to his passenger. "Listen," he said tentatively, "I know we can't be lovers, but I'm willing to be everything but." Without hesitation, Utina took the offered hand, lacing her fingers tightly with his, and smiled at him reassuringly, since she'd just been trying to think of a way to say the same thing. "Works for me," she said. "So whatever bothers you, bring it to me first. Whatever happens, no matter what, we'll help each other, okay? That's the kind of friends I want us to be. Always." He squeezed her hand and smiled, his bruised face looking fresher in the clean light of this beautiful winter's day. "Always," he replied, and settled back a little more behind the controls, his left hand gently gripping the top of the wheel. After a few more minutes, he chuckled, eyeing his shiner in the rearview mirror, and added, "Maybe we should tell Dad we got mugged." Utina gave him an odd look for a moment, then burst out laughing, and a moment later, he followed her lead. Airy Productions Unlimited presented Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, Symphony of the Sword No. 2, Interlude at the Hotel Monolith in C-sharp minor. The symphony will return.